Anne Brown.
And may I call you Anne?
You may.
Okay. Anne, I understand that you knew Schaefer early on in terms of LaBrie. LaBrie starts in 1955,
mm-hmm.
but you knew Schaefer and that environment not quite that early, but rather mm-hmm. early. So I would like for you to tell me, one, what was the conditions for your first encounter with Schaefer,
mm-hmm.
and were you a Christian or not at the time?
Mm-hmm.
Did you encounter Schaefer accidentally, or was it intentional?
Yeah, I first went to LaBrie in my second year at university for a few days. That must have been about 68. And then later on, I returned for a year. I was already a Christian. I'd become a Christian at the age of 12 through a Christian teacher. But I'd been encouraged to read existentialist literature by a French teacher while I was at high school. So I'd read, amongst other things, Camus' Plague and found that rather disturbing. And then, as well as existentialists, I'd been reading Voltaire's Candide. So I had a lot of questions about God, about the origin of evil and suffering. I was a Christian, but I didn't want to believe because it was comfortable, made me feel good. I had to know it was true, that it really was the truth. My first encounter with Dr. Schaefer was in the Saturday night discussion in the LaBrie Chapel in Waymo. And I remember him coming in his breeches and taking up his usual seat by the fireplace and asking what we wanted to discuss. And my initial reaction as I listened was one of enormous relief, that it was permissible to ask questions and to ask any questions. Absolutely nothing was out of court, and all questions were taken seriously. He never laughed at a question. Everybody was treated with respect. He often returned to people and asked if the answer made sense. It was a real demonstration of what I was to later discover was his dictum of giving honest answers to honest questions. I once asked a question that I'd asked before, about a month before or 6 weeks before, and Dr. Schaefer remembered that I was repeating the same question and really understood that I was still wrestling to reach a point of clarity. And I began to listen to the tapes. I sat in the study room in Chalet Beau Seat in the evenings and began to work through the lectures, possible answers to basic philosophical questions. And as I listened, I found that my questions were being answered. And it really was exciting. I can still remember. It was so exciting to come to the realization that biblical revelation tallies with the nature of reality, that it is the best fit in making sense of the human condition, and it answers the big questions about the nature of human existence, about morality, about knowledge. And as I listened to more tapes and to Dr. Schaefer in person, what struck me was that Dr. Schaefer was masterful in devising original expressions to communicate biblical truth. So he described human beings as glorious ruins. We're glorious since we're made in God's image but ruined because since the fall, this image is marred and broken. So on the one hand, people may perform sacrificial acts and create great beauty. But on the other hand, humans are capable of the most barbarous behaviour. And it's interesting that even today, because I work with students, those terms still resonate with students today. They may not have heard so much about Dr. Schaefer or read his books, but those terms are really meaningful. I found one illustration that Dr. Schaefer gave at this time particularly helpful in seeing that being a Christian doesn't mean taking a blind leap of faith. It went something like this. A climber's lost in the mountains in a whiteout and becomes stuck in a precarious position. Now, of course, it was probably more meaningful because we were in the Alps, we were surrounded by mountains, could appreciate what it was like to get stuck up there. The climber shouts out for help and eventually a voice responds. The voice claims to be that of a local Swiss person who's lived in the mountains for years, knows them really well, and claims to be able to guide the climber out of danger. Now, nobody in their right mind would immediately leap from the mountain. He'd check out the other person, ask questions. Does he really know where he is on the mountain? Does he understand his situation? Is he as familiar as he claims to be? And when he was satisfied, he'd begin to descend. And we may evaluate the evidence for the Christian faith in exactly the same way. And Dr. Schaefer emphasised that our faith is based on sufficient but not exhaustive evidence. So the climber couldn't see the whole path. It didn't immediately become clear, but he had confidence to move forward. I think what stands out to me about Dr. Schaefer is his compassion for people. I remember walking up the hill with him one evening after the prayer meeting on a Sunday evening, I think. At the time, I was working in Bellevue, the home for disabled children, which was next door to the Schaefer's chalet. And Dr. Schaefer asked me in particular about one of the children. And I was really impressed that he had understanding and empathy for the struggles of a disabled adolescent living next door. It was a time when they were very busy in Libri, but he'd noticed and was concerned for that little person. And in fact, as far as he was concerned, there were no little people. Now, I went back and forth to Libri for a number of years. There's no doubt that it deeply impacted my life. Libri helped to give me clear convictions. I suppose several key ideas stand out for me. Dr. Schaefer helped me to understand that biblical truth was both subjectively satisfying and objectively true and defensible. So there's no need for Christians to be defensive. Our task is gently and compassionately to take the roof off, as he called it. So gently to expose the inadequacies and the inconsistencies in another's worldview. But not only is biblical truth defensible, it touches on every area of life. There is, for example, a biblical rationale for Christians engaging in creation care and in the arts, both of which are important to me. Before I'd gone to Libri, I'd been involved in various environmental campaigns, but I didn't realise that there was a good biblical basis for what I was doing. There was a framework to make sense of it.
In fact, Schaefer, as you know, would have been one of the first to write about, as an evangelical, when he sort of is addressing Lynn White. Mm. And that whole discussion about, are Christians responsible for, as they would say, raping the environment? Mm. And so it's most amazing that here's a man living in Europe, but up in the mountains, and yet he understood that that was an issue that Christians had something of which to say.
Yeah.
And so I find that one amazing. I've been involved in the creation care, that sort of thing, stewardship. Mm. But we find here is a man, an evangelical, thoroughly evangelical.
And what he wrote remains pertinent.
It does.
People still quote Lynn White.
Yes, that's right.
That was a very influential article that he wrote in the 60s.
Yes, it was.
And we still have to keep responding to it.
Yes, yes.
So he was ahead of his time.
Yes.
In taking up that issue.
In that sense, we often think of him being prophetic, and not so that he's telling us what's going to happen, but he knew how to speak into culture.
He did.
At those places where culture was wrestling with something. And he saw it at that time, so had we continued doing that, we might have had more say in some of these issues, but we sort of fell back and didn't do that.
Mm. Well, I remember him making the point that, that I can't remember exactly the context, but it was in the chapel, and but he was pointing to us all and saying, but it's up to you, all of you, to take it forward, not just to keep reiterating his arguments, because there would be new battles, and there would be other issues that would be raised, but to keep applying the same principles to our analysis and engagement with culture.
And I think that is a very important point to remind people that Schaefer was not simply trying to get a following.
No.
What he wanted to do is to help us to understand, how do you do the analysis?
Yeah.
How do you bring the biblical truth to this area? Mm. And he wasn't asking for everybody to do it precisely as he did it.
Not a bit.
But that the approach is what he was interested in our doing. And I think sometimes when we talk to people about Schaefer, they think all we're trying to do is kind of raise somebody as an icon or something. But that is the, well, that would be the furthest thing from his desire, that's for sure.
No, and more important than ever for us to engage with culture and take on the issues that are being raised in so many areas.
Yes.
But I think the other thing was about Dr. Schaefer and the other workers in Le Brie was that they didn't just argue for the truths of Christianity. They weren't just reasoning, they absolutely lived it. So they demonstrated that prayer was a reality. In fact, prayer and dependence on God was foundational to the community. Now, my husband and I have been involved in student ministry with IFES for much of our lives, so that's well over 35 years. And we've tried to mirror, to some extent, the practice of giving honest answers to honest questions in dialogues with students and in print. And it remains more important than ever to insist on the truth claims of the gospel.
Yes, when I became a Christian in 65, when I was 20, and I don't say this in any critical way at all, but just as a matter of reality, I was within a rather fundamentalist group. They tend to be a little legalistic, but they were some of the most godly people that I knew and have much indebted to them. But having said that, I had an interest in philosophy coming out of high school. And when I became a Christian, this idea that you didn't ask questions in that context, you just believe, sort of, pat you on the head and say, now, dearie, don't ask any questions, just believe. And if you did ask a question, then some might even suspect you hadn't come to Christ yet. Because if you did, apparently all those questions should be, they vanished. Well, they didn't vanish for me. But I kept saying, well, I can't ask the question. But it was when I read that Schaeffer said something to the effect, you did not have to commit intellectual suicide to be a Christian.
Yeah.
And that you did, honest questions deserved honest answers. And they weren't questions of challenge. They were questions of inquiry.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we wanted to know. And that was just something so relief to me.
Liberating.
Yes, it was, definitely.
And at a very personal level, I think LaBrie equipped me for some of the hard times in life. I remember Dr. Schaeffer on several occasions, and I'm sure it's in print as well, talking about Jesus' reaction at the tomb of Lazarus in John 11. Now, what he talks about there is that that Jesus didn't just shed a few tears. He was deeply moved. In fact, he was angry. He was angry because death was not meant to be. It's abnormal. It's a result of the fall. And Schaeffer makes an important distinction. Jesus was angry at the death of Lazarus without being angry with himself as God. Now, I don't think I appreciated the profundity of this distinction until I was coping with bereavement myself and was angry at the untimely death of a loved one. And at first I didn't know how to handle this anger. And then I recollected John 11 and realised I was free to be angry at the separation, at the death of a family member, without being angry with God. Now, as a 17-year-old, I grappled intellectually with Camus' Plague. I think later on it was more of an existential thing. The problem of pain and suffering is probably still the biggest stumbling block to faith for contemporary students. Certainly one of the biggest. But Schaeffer speaks of Jesus' response to the death of Lazarus in John 11 as being a great flaming cry into the morass of 20th, now 21st century. Jesus' fury at the evil of death absolutely refutes any insinuation that God is indifferent to our suffering and to death. And moreover, the intervention of the cross when Christ, the innocent one, died, makes it abundantly clear that he identifies with our suffering and pays the price for wrongdoing.
That's a marvelous insight that Schaeffer brings out. I, as a pastor for 30 years myself, I think I never have had a funeral, but I've wept in anger because I just realize what an enemy sin is. I don't mean personal sin, but the fallen state in which we find ourselves.
Absolutely.
And I think that seems to me to be right. I don't think we want to romanticize this. I mean, you know, I'm thinking of Lewis when he writes in the Magician's Nephew, and as Diggory had been responsible for bringing the White Witch into Narnia, and then Aslan tells him, well, you've got to do something. And as you know, Diggory's mother was very sick, and he thought about bargaining with Aslan and saying, you know, I'll do something about the White Witch for you, but you would you help my mother? But he realized that wasn't a good idea. Mm. And then he says, there's this marvelous phrase, at least in my thinking, that he said, Dingery is saying, for a while I had just been looking at the great paws of Aslan, but then I looked up, and what I saw was something that was overwhelming, something I'd never seen before. And he said, there were great shiny tears coming down the lion's face. Mm. And he said, I know, my son, I know, grief is great. Mm. And I think, well, Lou has caught it as Schaefer catches it. Mm. That, and we must understand that people are living in that fallen state.
They are.
And it is the aberration.
Absolutely.
And so that's a wonderful.
And it's legitimate for Christians to be angry.
Yes.
And to work to combat the plague that was set in motion by the events in Genesis 3. Yes. So Christians can and should be involved in fighting against sickness in all its forms, environmental abuses, social evils. We can fight and protest about the wrongs in the world without fighting God.
Yes.
It wasn't his idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's wonderful. And we never get it done perfectly. Yeah. As I remember Schaefer saying or writing somewhere, if you want perfection or nothing, you'll get nothing every time. Mm. And sometimes I think people tend to say, oh, well, but this isn't going to fix everything. Well, that's not, of course, it's not going to fix everything. Only Christ fixes everything. Mm. But if you wait around till you get the perfect solution, it's even what we call an informal fallacy in that kind of arguing.
And well, it's certainly on environmental issues. People feel the problems are so big that what they do isn't significant. But I think he makes a very good point there about, I can't remember exactly how he puts it, but that there should be almost pockets of substantial healing. Mm. So just if Christians work within their own small area, whatever it is, that then you can look at this and say, well, there is somebody making a difference in the way that they live, or reclaiming this bit of land.
Yes, we can't do it all.
We can't.
And I think some Christians become paralyzed because of the enormity of the task as we look at the brokenness of the world in which we live. As you knew the man, and you've said some things, what stood out in your mind about Schaefer the man? You've mentioned something about his empathy, the idea that no little people. Mm. He had remembered your question.
Absolutely, yeah.
So he took you seriously.
He did. I think just the openness and the warmth. So I think when I went to Le Brie, I was fairly shy. I didn't like to speak up too much. But I felt I could ask my questions. I didn't feel that somebody was going to say, oh, that's nonsense, why are you asking that? No, it was just a very warm, relaxed, open atmosphere that invited questions.
And living, I'm assuming you had meals from time to time with the Schaefers.
Yep. Most of the time I was there, I worked in Bellevue, which was next door. So I took my meals with the children there. But I was a member of the church, so I went to the church meetings. Occasionally had meals in Malaise. Yeah, I mean, it was a treat. It was a treat, the way that there would be a topic for for discussion at the table. Somebody would raise it and then everybody would listen. It wasn't that there were generally lots of other discussions going on at the same time, that one person would ask a question or say what they'd been listening to, studying in Farrell House, and then there would be this great discussion which could go on for hours.
And this, would you sense this had been programmed, or it was just kind of the natural flow of the way they lived?
No, it was just completely natural. Mm. It wasn't orchestrated. No.
Yeah.
It was which in fact I think was really valuable, and it's something that we've tried to do in student conferences actually. Mm-hmm. In allocating a table, asking students what the issues are they want to discuss, and say, right, during this meal, this table will be talking with whoever has spoken on this topic at that table.
You just say something about the work at Bellevue.
Yeah.
Because most people are not aware of that work. I think it's not...
It's not there anymore.
It's not there anymore. But
no.
Just say
well, it began... it was started by some people who'd been involved with Labrie, and one person who had actually become a Christian through Labrie. I think there initially were three women who set it up. Physiotherapists and speech therapists. And it was a home for disabled children. Virtually all of them had cerebral palsy. At the time, there really wasn't an equivalent in Switzerland, so they were really filling a need in starting this in this home. And it aimed to be a home for the children which catered for the whole person. So they had their therapy sessions, but all of life was therapy. So the way they were dressed, the way they were fed. But more than that, to teach them Christian truth. So sometimes people from Labrie would come in. Certainly Jane and Betty came in often on Sunday afternoons and sang to the children, which they loved. Priscilla Schaefer was very involved with Bellevue as well. Not Schaefer anymore. Sandry, right. Priscilla Sandry. Yes. So it was a wonderful place actually of people looking after children who were very broken physically, but aiming to look after them, give them a wonderfully happy home, and cater for the whole person. We used to take wonderful trips down to the lake and go on a boat. We took them to Gruyere and went to a chocolate factory. We went out and mapped the chalets in Waymo and the age of them all. We just had a wonderful time with them. It was a wonderfully positive way of approaching people with disabilities.
You went to Labrie, I think you said, somewhere around 1968.
Yeah.
So that would have been just about the time. It's 2-3 years after the Wheaton lectures of 1965 in the States. And then, of course, in 1968, the book, actually two books come out, Escape from Reason and The God Who Was There. So that's about the time that Schaefer's now begun to become well-known, better known, I should say, even though I find it interesting that in 1960, Time magazine did an article. It's not a large article, but it's an article in Time magazine 5 years after Labrie had started and spoke of Schaefer as being the missionary to the European intellectual. And we have to think about that. That happened at a time when we didn't have Twitter. Mm. You know, so there wasn't social media that was broadcasting what's going on up in the Swiss Alps.
Yeah.
But the word began to spread. I think that gives us some measure of the profound effect that this was having, not just in this little place called Le Brie, but it filtered out that people began to learn about this and hear about what was happening there. So you come to the Le Brie at about the time when Schaefer is starting to become more popular, he's going to have to go speak. Do you think that in any way influenced what went on at Le Brie, his time for people? Obviously, he was not there as much, but...
When I was there for a year, I seem to remember he seemed to be there quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
There were occasional absences, but then I used to go back. I went back most summers for 2-3 months to work in Bellevue, and I think. Yeah, when they started making the films, then it became busier. Of course, they did have a lot of other workers as well. You know, Barry Segrin was there, Pierre and Daniel Bertou, Debbie and Udo, John and Priscilla. I mean, there were a lot of workers. So certainly there were a lot of people. I do remember, as time went on, there were problems with the numbers and the restrictions on numbers, and that's when French Le Brie started, and people were going across there because they'd reached the limit of the numbers they were allowed in Weymouth. So it was certainly swamped with people.
Well, that is about the time, I mean, 68, I think, that probably more people started coming, being aware. The book, the lectures themselves in 65, of course, startled many of the younger evangelicals because of this very thing of which you speak, that this idea, honest questions deserved honest answers. That was, I don't know that our day... Well, I suppose we do, because I think the same thing is going on. But I'm not so sure today, and maybe you'd have a take on this because you work with students. In Schaefer's day, it did seem that students did have questions. I'm not so sure that they have the questions today. What would you say?
Yeah, they don't. Well, the same questions are there, but I don't think they realize they've got them.
Right.
No, that's absolutely right. There wasn't the same, I don't know, students, late 60s, early 70s, there was much more, I don't know, we were more on the edge, I think. people definitely did have more questions. But I'm always amazed, really, that I got to Le Brie, because I was studying in a Welsh university, and really the only reason I think that I went was because I went to a church where the minister had trained at Westminster Seminary in the States, and so he was aware of Schaefer. But he was probably the only minister in Wales at that time who was, and recognised that he had students in the congregation who had questions that he didn't perhaps know how to tackle. And so he told 3 or 4 of us that he thought we should go to Le Brie, which was wonderful.
Yes.
I don't know who else would have done it at that time.
But you had no idea before you went?
I don't think I did. I don't think I did. And in between then, maybe when in my last 2 years at university, the Le Brie story, I think, came out and I read that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went back for a year.
thinking back on that experience when you, not so much your summers, but maybe even during the summers when you would go back to work, what kind of stands out in your mind in the big picture with Schaefer and what was happening? As you think, as you'd go back, you know, now you're away for several months, then you go back, were you observing changes? What was happening? Were the students different? That is, were they coming from different places in the world? Or maybe you wouldn't make a connection with that.
I don't think when I was going back and forward in the 70s, I think the students were pretty much the same, and they would come from very far afield. I mean, there might be people coming from India. I mean, a friend of mine is married to somebody who is now a vicar. We discovered we must have been in Le Brie at the same time, but he said you wouldn't have recognised me because he had hair down to his shoulders. He was coming from Kathmandu. You know, people were coming from the ends of the earth. I think what stands in my mind is the large number of people becoming Christians and the confidence that this was the truth, or what Schaefer called true truth. And I think if you've observed large numbers of people becoming Christians in that way, it gives you a confidence it can happen again. And, you know, in a sense, there's no reason why this culture can't be turned around. The people who were coming were very far away from being Christians when they arrived, but they became Christians. What I remember is, you know, people being were they baptized? I'm trying to think. But I remember in the Sunday, yeah, they were baptized, weren't they? I can't remember.
Okay. we'll leave that one.
Yeah, there were certainly people every Sunday, it seemed to me, out at the front, professing faith.
So how would he would preach?
Yeah.
Do you remember how that would go?
I seem to remember that people were baptized.
Yes, but when he would get to what we might call the end of the service.
He didn't make any appeal.
He didn't. He'd just say, if you have questions, that he'd be there to answer, or somebody would, or...
No, I don't think so, because he preached long. I mean, he often preached for an hour, and people may have caught him if they had questions,
right.
But no, I think it was a long service.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as I've gone back to Le Brie in subsequent years, that there were more Christians.
Yes.
There were definitely more Christians.
Mm-hmm.
So it was in the late 60s and 70s that you had large numbers of non-Christians coming. It seemed to me. But I mean, after that, I wasn't as close to...
Right. But I think others have said who there came later, who would have the same recollection.
Mm.
So did you notice... Now, we talk about Schaefer's compassion, empathy, but did you ever see... when he was abrupt, maybe spoke with a harshness at any time?
Not that I was aware of.
No.
No, not that I was aware of.
Right. In the meetings, the Saturday night, when, of course, we have, when they started recording those, we have all those.
Mm.
And they've been digitized.
Mm.
And I've listened to a number of hours of those tapes as I've been doing research. So when the questions started, did you ever find him belittling anybody for the questions they ask?
No, never.
So how would he... I'm sure there must have been some people who... at least in a moderate way, challenge what he was saying, or...
Oh, they did challenge, but he kept his cool.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think he put into practice what he talks about doing is that you always leave somebody room to escape. So he didn't back people against the wall aggressively. It was, no, I think he was very generous in his interactions with people, not harsh.
So do you have a particular memory, story, that you would like to share before we bring this to an end? Conclusion, I should say.
Yeah, my abiding memory is the one I started with yes. him sitting, usually cross-legged, in his breeches, by the fire, very relaxed,
yeah.
and welcoming questions.
Yeah. He knew his Bible.
He did know his Bible. Yeah, he did. Very well.
You know, we're privileged to have
yeah.
his Bible. And the notations
yep.
Everywhere. So, in fact, I was asked to come speak at a reading club and to speak on Schaefer and to bring his Bible. I remember one lady, I don't think some of them were even Christians, but one lady said to me, she said, "My, it looks like two Bibles here." He had made so many notations.
Yeah.
And they're wonderful.
They are.
They're wonderful.
Yeah.
You really get a sense of what he believed. But he did know the text.
Mm.
And he read through the Bible.
Mm.
Mm. Well, and it's a delight and a great pleasure, to spend time with you. I'm sure there are many things that we could talk about. But I think we've gotten to the substance
yeah.
of the things that are interesting to us today. So thank you very much.
Pleasure.